Final hour of power here on this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. You're tapped in. The youngest in Charles and L. Willingham taking you up to 10 o'clock right now. We go out to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. So we find our pal Law Murray, who covers the Clippers as well as the NBA for The Athletic. Give him a follow on the X app at Law Murray, the NU. Law, big reason why we wanted to have you on tonight. First of all, good to hear from you as always. Hope the Labor Day weekend treated you well, my friend. I know you are hard at work, so we won't keep you long. Can you get our D.C. audience hip to the Shams bomb that was dropped earlier this afternoon, or I guess the Pablo Torre bomb that was dropped earlier this afternoon, basically alleging that the Clippers tried to circumvent the salary cap to appease Kawhi Leonard and his uncle? Can you give us the details?
Yeah, I mean, long story short, the Clippers had a founding sponsor for the new arena back in 2021, Aspiration. I remember Media Day where they were introducing one of the founders to Aspiration next to Steve Ballmer, and it sounded like they were going to be part of what the Clippers were trying to do with this new arena, you know, like have a sense of sustainability, and that sounds great on its surface. The company was not something that was going to be sustainable itself, ironically. They wound up, their partnership with the Clippers actually ended before the Clippers even got into it, though. Like 2021, it was, look here, Aspiration. By 2023, Aspiration was nowhere to be found, right? So there's that part of it. What we did not know, and what Pablo shed light on in a very bright way, is that Kawhi Leonard had a sponsorship deal, and the details of the sponsorship deal, while Aspiration was struggling, Kawhi was getting paid.
Getting
that money, you know what I'm saying? You know, someone put it to me, Halle Berry, hallelujah, right?
For sure.
I mean, yeah. Some of y'all know where that come from. So, long story short, because this is a long and incomplete story as it stands today, there's a paper trail, and you're really in a situation where you're trying, if you're in the NBA, you have to go and to a place you've been before, and that's investigating the Clippers on a Kawhi Leonard-related subject and to see if rules were broken as it related to Kawhi Leonard's endeavors to get paid.
So here's a question real quick, Law, to interject here. This is common practice, though, in the NBA, right, in terms of having, you know, an NBA star with a major team sponsor, right? Like, that's not circumventing the process, is it? Like, that's – or the cap, is it? I feel like everybody's got – it's a way to give some extra cash on top to the player, right?
You can say that, and then at the same time – what you can't have is anything that's going to cross the lines of the collective bargaining agreement.
You can't play in the NBA's face.
Right. Like, you can't secure the services of a player and then say, hey, we'll pay you this much, but we also got some more money coming your way. You know, that's the tricky part here. That's the part where the Clippers are going to have to answer to the league. And the league, in turn, they're going to be asking the Clippers to respond when it comes to the money that Steve Ballmer had to invest in this company, Aspiration. Did that money basically go right back to Kawhi? You know, like right. That's the part where it's like, You can't do that. Like, a sponsorship deal, those happen. Yeah, those happen all the time. You can go and see every damn professional sports team.
Yes,
they have these things. What's trippy is, like, Kawhi. What Pablo was trying to investigate is that Kawhi do anything based on the contract that he signed with this company, basically, to say that he was doing any of the work for this company. And he didn't find anything. And a lot of that checks out when you look at, like, if you want Kawhi Leonard to do anything on social media, especially in the 21-22 season, Kawhi wasn't active on social media at all.
Right.
You're not getting any social media engagement from Kawhi when he doesn't have a Twitter account or an Instagram account, and he doesn't even have, you know, when I say this, it's like there's no content creators. Like, even now, like, Kawhi has an active Instagram account and a less active Twitter account. But even now, like, you can't ask Kawhi about any of that stuff because he's going to say that he's got managers handling those accounts. Kawhi's not on his phone playing with that stuff. So that's the part where it's like, this doesn't look like what everybody else might have. You know, Kawhi's not putting his name out there on anything. So now it's like, well, was this a deal that was signed for the sole purpose of paying Kawhi Leonard? That's where the investigation is going to center around.
This is part of the statement from the Clippers. Neither Mr. Ballmer nor the Clippers circumvented the salary cap or engaged in any misconduct related to aspiration. And to play devil's advocate, I guess, real quickly here, Law. If he would have made a singular social media post saying, hey, welcome to Aspiration, so on and so forth, I'm Kawhi, I'm, you know, if he would have done any activations, I guess, is the word that we use with this, would this all kind of be a moot point? Is that the big holdup here? Is that there's no evidence of him holding up his end of the bargain?
You know, I've thought about that, and I don't think it would. I think this company felt like it was DOA. Really look at it. Like, I really thought, I was like, man, what if Kawhi did retweet something from the team with the aspiration tag in it? It's like, dude, Kawhi could have wore some shoddy material that they came up with, you know, one of their hoodies or something, with their print emblazoned across his chest. It would have meant jack squat if this company couldn't even complete the process of going public.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't think that would have mattered. Like, I think there's a lot of focus today on, yeah, he didn't do any work for them. And, yeah, it sounded like, you know, again, according to Pablo's conversation with someone who worked at this company, that while this company was struggling to justify their existence, you know, Uncle Dennis was on the phone letting them know that the check was due at the end of the month. Like,
right. Pay up now. So, Law, real quick. You know, Lakers fans, I've seen it on social media already. Lakers fans are kind of coming to the defense of Jeannie Buss and Pelinka, saying, see, this is why we couldn't get him. They had that type of cheese.
I mean, look, if Lakers fans,
I didn't realize Uncle Dennis was calling the shots like this, is what I'll say, Law. I didn't know Uncle Dennis had that much pull, man.
Well, that's the thing. That's been the story, you know, related to Kawhi going back to his time in San Antonio. That's the thing with the Clippers. And you know what? Like, anyone who didn't sign Kawhi Leonard is going to take a victory lap because they don't have these problems.
Right.
And if you want to do that, then cool. But, like, I will say this. No matter what happens in this investigation, whether the Clippers get, you know, off again, or if they get hammered 2000 Minnesota Timberwolves style.
Can you, reiterate that real quick? Can you tell people the consequences of that? That's the last time something like this has happened, correct? Where a team's been found guilty of it? And what was the consequence for the Timberwolves?
Well, we can only really compare the last time something like this happened if the punishment meets what happened in 2000. In 2000, Joe Smith signed a series of one-year contracts, and it felt like the third time was the crowd.
Yeah.
The NBA voided Joe Smith's 2000 contract with Minnesota, made him a free agent. Joe goes to Detroit for a year. He must have loved Minnesota because that dude came back to Minnesota in 2001, but not before Glenn Taylor, the then owner, was suspended for a year.
Wow.
Kevin McHale, he took a leave of absence that lasted through the 2000-2001 season. The Timberwolves were docked 5 first-round draft picks in the middle of Kevin Garnett's prime, and they were fined a lot of 2000 money.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Five the, ones?
Jeez. Now, now everyone knows how that crippled the Minnesota Timberwolves then.
Yeah.
But it's not like the Minnesota Timberwolves traded a future MVP and future draft picks before that, and they did that for a marginal player.
Yeah.
If the Clippers were to lose Kawhi Leonard to something like that today, if they have Arthur at NC Dome in 2026, if the chairman, Steve Ballmer, is suspended for that, that would be the most awful of public looks in the short and in the long term, obviously. They can't they're still paying first round picks back. They can't handle another kind of, you know, punishment where they're losing assets. And the big thing is this: they're trying to be a major player in free agency. They're trying to look for their next star in the next one or two off seasons. And so the NBA, again, like, they can look the other way, and if they do that and the Clippers don't get severely penalized, then you're going to have another uproar on top of the current one that you have. That's the best case scenario for the Clippers, is nothing happens and that everyone is scrutinizing their next big move that they've been planning for the last two off seasons at the least.
So, Law, real quick, I know you got to go, but answer me this, bro, because I'm thinking of this in real time. Steve Ballmer was looked at as like an angel, bro. Think about what the Clippers were dealing with before with Donald Sterling, and then Ballmer comes in, resuscitates the franchise. They start winning financially. They're doing well. The Intuit Dome just got put up last year. It's probably the best state-of-the-art, indoor arena in North America right now. Like, you think they'll go soft on him potentially because of that, or do you think that doesn't play a factor? And I'm asking you just to be real here, me and you talking homie to homie, because that's how I look at it. It's like, okay, it's Steve.
I don't look at Ballmer as a angel at all. Not to say that he's, opposite.
You know what I mean?
But like, I know what you mean, and I want to refute it gently just to make the point that Steve Ballmer has, from day one, been about one thing, and that is winning at all costs. That makes him the true Donald Sterling antithesis, because Donald Sterling would – like, he was cheap. Like, he always brought the bottom line.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he was only concerned about that. He was never concerned about making the players the priority, making his coach the priority, making his franchise the priority. Donald Sterling was just like, how can I spend as little money as possible in this second biggest market in the country? You know, the owners, I would say the other owners, they love Donald Sterling. The other owners, they've had, I mean, look how many owners are envious of Ballmer.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Jeannie Buss, number one on that list.
Yeah.
You know, Ballmer had a go at James Dolan, and then Ballmer was like, I'm going to repossess the Kiel Forum. I'm going to get this land one way or the other.
Yep.
And he got it. You know, that's one big reason why Intuit Dome is here now. I don't think that, you know, there are going to be owners that will want the league to not go ham on Steve Ballmer simply for the fact that they have their slippery slopes, a term introduced to me by Mark Cuban when the Donald Sterling thing was going down. It's like, hey, you don't want to look at all of our tapes.
Yeah, right,
you know what I'm saying?
That's why
Sterling lasted for as long as he did. So on one hand, it's like, yeah, all these owners are going to want to protect each other. But on the other hand, it's a competition, and they're going to want some kind of accountability here as it relates to the Bombers organization.
Law, we're going to be waiting for the Athletic drop like you waiting outside the mall on a Saturday morning for a pair of J's, brother. I can't wait to see what you got for us, giving us the details on what's going on in L.A. We appreciate you as always, brother.
Hey, thanks for having me, Winnell.
Yes, indeed. That is our pal, Law Murray, one of the absolute best talking all things NBA. We will take a quick timeout when we come back. In honor of the NFL season getting kicked off tomorrow, we'll get some 2025 NFL predictions next. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. You can tweet at me as well. It is at N-E-L-L underscore BTP. Chris, remind the people my social media handle. It is at N-E-L-L underscore BTP. That's what it is. I want to get to some season predictions here in the National Football League. Chris, if you could be so kind to politely put some bumper music under us here. Get us getting that big game, big Sunday, less than 24 hours away from the game feel as we get, oh, Lord, yes, we did. Yes, we did. We made it, ladies and gentlemen. Tomorrow, the ring ceremony for the Philadelphia Eagles. They will play host to the Dallas Cowboys, the Micah Parsons-less Dallas Cowboys, I might add. So in lieu of the season getting underway tomorrow, I figured we'd give a couple of predictions here. First and foremost, I want to predict our award winners. We'll go MVP, Offensive Rookie of the Year, Defensive Rookie of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, as well as Coach of the Year. Let's get it started. My 2025 MVP for the NFL regular season, I believe the MVP this year is going to be none other than Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts. What do you mean? Yes, I think Jalen Hurts is going to be the 2025 MVP. Here is why. I think teams are going to commit a lot more resources to trying to stop Saquon Barkley, and Jalen Hurts is going to put up some big-time numbers while the Eagles will look good in the win column as well. The dude's been to two Super Bowls already in his short time as an NFL starter. I love the way he carries himself. I hate him because I'm a Commanders fan, but I love him as a man, period, because I love the leadership. I love the no-nonsense approach, and he just seems like a dude's dude. So that is my MVP. We'll go from MVP to Offensive Player of the Year. Because the MVP, I think, is going to be a quarterback, I think the Offensive Player of the Year is actually going to be a wide receiver. And the wide receiver that I think is going to be the Offensive Player of the Year for the 2025 season, I think it is going to be none other. And it's going to surprise some people. I think it's going to be Ja'Marr Chase of the Cincinnati Bengals. And I said, oh, it's going to surprise some people. And you are like, what? That's not a surprise. Well, here's why I think it may surprise some of you. I actually do not think that the Bengals are going to make the playoffs in the AFC. I think it's going to be a super tight race. I don't know if three teams come out of this AFC North because I have a lot of respect for the South, and I think the West is badass. But I think Ja'Marr Chase, after last year winning the Triple Crown, how do you follow up on that? I think he has another big-time campaign. Was he the Offensive Player of the Year last year? 2024 NFL Offensive Player of the Year was Saquon Barkley. Yeah, I think this year it is going to end up being Ja'Marr Chase. He should have won it last year based off of the numbers. We go from Offensive Player of the Year to Defensive Player of the Year. And my 2025 Defensive Player of the Year, to say it's going to surprise you maybe is a stretch, but I think this young man's about to have an unworldly season. My 2025 Defensive Player of the Year is going to be Will Anderson of the Houston Texans. I think he is ready to go completely rogue on the National Football League. I am a huge fan of this cat going into year three out of Alabama, 6'4", 250, former number three overall pick. I think he puts it all together during the 2025 campaign. Last year, if you're looking at Will Anderson, 11 sacks and got it done time in, time out for the Houston Texans. I'm a big fan of this young man, and I'm a big fan of the Texans as well. They're one of my sleepers in the AFC. From Defensive Player of the Year to Offensive Rookie of the Year. And this is going to be interesting. My Offensive Rookie of the Year, I think, is going to be Omarion Hampton of the LA Chargers. I think the Chargers are going to beat people up offensively, and I think Omarion Hampton is going to bring an element to that offense, a level of physicality to that offense that they've been missing. I know they're going to be without Rashawn Slater, so people have questions about the offensive line. I think Omarion Hampton is the goods. Point blank, period. He is my Offensive Rookie of the Year for 2025. My Defensive Rookie of the Year for 2005. This is such low-hanging fruit that I feel bad for even choosing the kid. It's going to be Abdul Carter. I expect him to have a massive campaign, and I think he is a cat that routinely throughout camp got recognition, praise from the beat writers, the people that were there every day. He's got to prove it. He's got to prove it. My NFL coach of the year for the 2025 season, I think, is going to be Sean Payton, head coach of the Denver Broncos. I think Denver is, look, Kansas City's won the AFC West every year that Pat Mahomes has been a starter in the NFL. I don't know if that stops this year, but I do think Denver is going to be that team in the AFC, that thorn in the side for the Kansas City Chiefs. And then my Super Bowl prediction for you. We'll go big here on our prediction segment. I think the 2025 Super Bowl is going to be between, I think it's going to be the Texans taking on the Green Bay Packers. There you have it. My 2025 NFL predictions here on Overtime. We will take a quick timeout when we come back. Ready to hear from our pal, Charles Davis, NFL on CBS analyst. He'll be on the call Sunday with Andrew Catalan and Jason McCourty calling Colts and Dolphins. He'll join us next. Welcome back. You're tapped in to the youngest in Charles and O. Willingham right now. We go to the guest hotline where we find one of my absolute favorites, NFL analyst for CBS as well as the NFL Network. You can actually hear him this weekend with Jason McCourty and Andrew Catalan calling Dolphins and Colts on Sunday. Our guy Charles Davis, kind enough to give us a couple of moments. Let's start with Thursday. The big difference in Thursday's contest, CD, no Micah Parsons for the Dallas Cowboys. Your first blush reaction when that news came across your ticker last Thursday?
I was surprised. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I had the crystal ball and saw the future. I'm not. I was actually doing Sirius XM radio that day.
Wow.
And opined that that Thursday, Micah Parsons would be in a Cowboys uniform and would be rushing the passer in Philadelphia. I thought they'd get something done. I thought that he would play that Thursday. We've seen these holdouts, hold-ins, hold-whatevers, and people show up and play more times than they don't.
Right.
Okay? So I thought that's where we're going. In fact, had on a guest that day, a beat writer for the Cowboys.
Wow.
And asked him about I said, hey, I think he's going to play. What do you think? You're there every day.
Right.
And he said, I co-sign with you 70%. He was 70% in the camp that he would be a Cowboy. So I'm not saying that to justify where my stance was.
Right.
I'm saying it, Linnell, because I do believe there was a strong sense across the league that he would somehow remain a Cowboy.
Yeah.
You mean who in this world wants to give away that kind of talent? I know you get draft picks back, et cetera, but for the most part, you want him to play for you
forever.
Most part. and so when that happened, that's why I say, and I'll come back to this, I better just speak for myself. It was a surprise.
Yeah.
I don't think many people saw it coming. That's the best way I can put it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it felt like, CD, it happened so quick. You got the Schefter report from ESPN that morning that, okay, now they're listening for the first time.
Yeah, I heard that too. Did that really rattle you when you heard it?
So,
when I heard it, I went,
I rolled my eyes at it. I did the same thing you probably did. Rolled my eyes at it and said, okay, Schefter.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. And then a couple hours later, well, before even that, Michael Irvin goes on NFL Live and guarantees it. So
and he's pretty close to the program.
Well, definitely.
Right? If you watch a documentary, you know he's pretty close to the program. But for me, with Adam, mm-hmm. I never doubt what Adam is giving
ever.
Me. Adam's a colleague of mine, right? And we used to work together, and I think he's as good as there's ever been, right? But when I hear they're now willing to listen, I just felt like that was just much more part of the overall back and forth. That's what I thought.
I took it the same way.
Okay, Mike, in your camp, guess what? We're listening to other people now. Are you sure? That's what I took it as.
Yeah.
Adam, of course, had it detailed and nailed. But I was surprised. I really was surprised that it happened, because if you had told me it would have happened in March, Linnell,
mm-hmm.
and the Cowboys now got the two ones to parlay and deal with, you would have had me a little bit more than I thought they were going to do it there. And I was surprised they still got the ones.
Well, that was my thing, Charles. So clearly, so it sounds like you disagree with what I'm about to say here. I was stunned at the compensation, Charles. I was like, this is a guy. To me, and obviously we were talking about it here locally in D.C. because it's relevant. These are our rivals. And we were like, man, I said four. I'd give up four ones for Micah. He's that type of player.
He's that good. He is that good. But it's just, I just feel like Linnell in recent years, I just had that talk with someone 2 days prior. Mm-hmm. I said, how many times do you see a blockbuster trade in the NFL and then you look at the compensation and go, huh, I thought they would have gotten more.
Yeah,
and that's why the two ones surprised me that it was two ones. I mean, you're right. Like, as great a player as Parsons, I think other people were like, I can give up more than that. But in this league, it doesn't feel like they're going for the same rate you would have thought before. We're seeing starting quarterbacks go to other teams, and you're not seeing two ones.
Yeah, very true. It's incredible because that's kind of what I spent a lot of Friday talking about was the compensation. And are you kidding me? If it only took two firsts, then why wasn't everybody in on this? Micah dealing with a little bit of a back. We'll see if he actually suits up on Sunday. But I think he'll play too. He's a competitor.
Play. I noticed they put that out there today that he might need a little help getting ready.
Uh-huh. I like the way you put that, CD. A little help. Sometimes we all need a little help. Look.
and then I'm watching the news and the video, and there he is at camp.
Looks good.
Packers. And he's lifting that sled, like, you know.
And CD, you've seen that up close in person like I have. You could tell that how someone's power. Feeling based on how someone jolts that one-man sled, and yeah.
And Linnell, to do that, you have to get down, like you're going almost into a squat position, and there's the back helping support that, and he lifted that sled up to the heavens.
Look rejuvenated.
He'll be wearing Curly Lambeau's number, and he will be announced as a starter. And what a heck of an opener for my colleagues at CBS, because it is you know, they've got that ball game.
Yeah. Detroit
at Green Bay. How great is that for an opener from my colleague?
Couldn't have scripted it up any better.
No, they got to be thrilled for that one. Absolutely thrilled. But I'll just leave it with this, with the Parsons deal. Mm-hmm. Compensation notwithstanding, all that other stuff. There is a camp of, hey, if Dallas uses the compensation right, this helps them, et cetera. And I agree with all of that. But we're not talking about a 32-year-old Micah Parsons. Does he have, you know, one more run in him? We're talking about Micah Parsons truly in his prime.
Yeah. Second contract.
Yes. And Green Bay, let's be honest about it. That was one of the quietest 11-6s last year because they were in division with Detroit, who won 15, right?
Yeah.
And Minnesota won 14. But all three made the playoffs. Even before the Parsons deal, tell me if I'm wrong, please, sir. Mm-hmm. Have you not heard plenty of chatter that many people expect Green Bay to possibly win that division this year? To maybe people are picking them to win the division this year.
I've heard it before Parsons. I've heard it. They got a good and offensive now, line. They're good on both sides of the trenches. Is what I like about them.
To me, they need Jordan Love, who I think is a very good player, to be that same guy we see the second half of seasons right out of the gate.
Right.
If they get that. Boy, that NFC North, we thought was rough before.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Chicago thinking they can make games. Yeah. And look what you got to deal with for this year. I'm not saying that they can't with Ben Johnson and crew. All I'm saying is this is a bad division that you're thinking I got to make games in.
Definitely. And I know our listening audience here locally isn't going to like this. We mentioned this in the tail end of the show on Friday. We were, you know, started our division preview series, CD.
Yeah.
And, dude, I don't know if it's ever happened, and you can speak to this better than I am, as you're, you know, more of a historian of the league. Has all four teams ever made the playoffs out of one division? Because the North has got that type of talent.
They've got that type of talent. I feel like it's happened, but I can't say when. It's like one of those things where you're sitting around somebody, and somebody said, well, you know, in 1931, it's like, I don't know. Yeah. I can't say. I feel like three is the max, especially where we are with divisions nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there was at one point prior to. But it was funny watching that Cowboys doc to be reminded.
Yeah.
The Arizona Cardinals were once the Phoenix Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in the NFC East.
Yep.
The New Orleans Saints were in the NFC West.
There's been some shuffling. There's definitely
shuffling around during that time frame. So anything, as they say, is possible.
For sure. Joined right now by our pal Charles Davis, NFL analyst for CBS as well as the NFL Network. You can check him out this weekend alongside Jason McCourty and Andrew Catalan calling Colts and Dolphins, getting started with an AFC matchup over on CBS. I want to keep things in the AFC, Charles, if you don't mind, and ask you about one of the teams that you're going to be talking about this weekend, the Miami Dolphins. And I believe I asked you about them earlier this offseason.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with Chris Broussard. He's got a very interesting way to describe the Dolphins last year. He described them as breakdancers, CD, meaning that they're kind of missing that element of toughness. The seats are getting warm for Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel up there in Miami. What type of season are you expecting out of them, and is there a chance that they can maybe surprise some people in the AFC? Because I like their pass rush, but yeah, they're question marks.
Yeah. But no, I think that, you know, when we spent the time in the offseason, there was very much a narrative that the division is Buffalo and Chase, mm-hmm. which I totally co-sign on that. Okay. But now you throw the other three teams in the hopper, and all of them can kind of make a case that maybe we're the number two team in this division. Things have to play out, obviously. Certain things have to happen. But the Jets feel good under new management, right, with Aaron Glenn and Justin Fields as their quarterback. New England feels like they were starting to get better last year, now with the addition of Vrabel and winning the offseason with free agency and a good draft and Drake May second year. They feel pretty good about where they're going, even though they're going to play a lot of youngsters. They're going to be really, really young, but talented. And then, of course, we're talking about the Dolphins. I felt like the narrative was those three could fight it out, but if you ask most people, they felt like the Dolphins were descending, while others might be ascending. I've watched this team preseason. I'm just starting to get ready for the game. I'm looking over things. I think their frontline talent's pretty good.
Yeah.
Depth, I think, is going to be an issue for them in certain places. But all in all, their frontline guys are pretty darn good. If people want to talk about their toughness, and I try to stay out of the toughness fight with people.
You hurt some feelings with that.
you hurt your feelings, and anyone who throws that bad boy on and goes out and plays in that league, there's an element of toughness
yes.
that most of us do not have. But their ability to win games against good football teams, I don't think we have any choice but to discuss that. And that's been their issue. That's been their Achilles heel. When they go up against the teams that become factors in the playoffs and factors down the stretch, they have not come out positively. And that has to change for them to make the moves they want to make, because they've retooled their offensive line, revamped it. They feel better about where they're going, even though they've lost Tron Armstead, who's a tremendous player.
Yeah.
They like the second-year Paul at left tackle. They like him as a player. They can be as explosive as ever, and that means they've got to get back to form and throwing the football around, and that means Tua, that means Jalen Waddle, that means Tyreek Hill. Can Darren Waller come back and be the Darren Waller we saw that was a Pro Bowler after sitting out for the last year, year and a half, whatever it is, at tight end? Because if he can, if he's that athlete, Linnell,
things get
in really jump up for them, right? But the big thing to me is they have to run the ball better. And I know it sounds like football 101 and the people are going to sleep immediately, but they were fully 10 to 12 yards behind the league average last year.
Which is crazy because when they first got there, that's what they leaned on.
They did, and they have people, but didn't get the year out of Jalen Wright they expected. He's hurt right now. I don't think he'll be ready to go week one. Achan is back after missing time during preseason. They expect him to go week one. But Ollie Gordon really showed well.
That preseason.
Was the Ollie Gordon we saw at Oklahoma State 2023 when he won a Doak Walker Award.
Yeah.
And defensively, you mentioned the pass rushers. Yeah. I mean, my goodness, if everyone's healthy and ready to go, Bradley Chubb, Jalen Phillips, Chop Robinson, and then Chris Greer, who gets jumped on a lot. But how about him going out and getting Matthew Judon?
Quietly, right?
Right? Four legit pass rushers off the edge. The addition of Kenneth Grant inside.
Mm-hmm.
The fifth-round pick, Jordan Phillips, has played really well in preseason. Another guy inside him, Clay Rubble. Zach Sealer's played well for them.
A couple of Terps out there. Yep.
Hey, listen, they sent them some playing Terps now. There's no doubt about it. But they've got players where the question mark is going to be until proven different is the secondary.
Yeah,
because, you know, you don't lose guys like they lost out of the secondary and expect to just automatically be better.
Yeah.
But they've got players, and I want to see Jason Marshall, who's going to start at the nickel, it looks like. They ended up cutting Mike Hilton, who was expected to play nickel for him. If he plays nickel to the ability they expect and he's never played it before, can they hold up on the back end? Because I really like their front seven on defense.
Look, I got a little bit of a soft spot for the Dolphins CD. You know, Chop is a DMV guy, was my ball boy at Montgomery Village Little League. Yep, I played with his older brother. He was our ball boy. Dad coached us. So I definitely know a little bit about Chop Robinson. Definitely rooting for him. Yes, from a young age, man.
In the second half of his rookie year.
That get-off is, yeah.
That's exactly why he was drafted where he was drafted, exactly what you're looking for. He is a double-digit sack guy just waiting to happen.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. Charles, one team in the AFC that I've kind of got the hots for and I think could make a deep run here if they can get out of their division, that is the Denver Broncos. But before we get into Denver individually, I want to jump around here. Of the sophomore quarterbacks, McCarthy, Penix, Daniels, Drake May, Caleb. I know I'm probably missing someone because there were so damn many drafted in that first round. Who do you think has the best team success in 2025?
Ooh. Best team? Let's go through them. Jaden Daniels has that opportunity.
Yes.
This is a good football team that Washington has in a division that, yes, it's Philadelphia, but there's no one else in that division that you would shy away from. And they're not going to shy away from Philadelphia. Everybody's going to take their shots at the champs.
Right.
Okay, you know that. But right now, I think they're the second best team in the division, one of the better teams in the NFC. I like what they did. And look, most people are talking about, wow, look what Adam Peters did this year. He really went, I think, he did that last year. Went for Marshawn Lattimore in the middle of the season. Okay?
He's aggressive.
He has not been shy from the moment he hit town. All right? So Daniels is there. I really think Drake May is on the rise.
Yeah.
I thought I had him late last year. Our crew had him in Buffalo.
Wow.
Late, nasty.
Cold.
And he played well enough that they scared the heck out of Buffalo, and Buffalo escaped with a win that day. I think they're going to get better, but as I mentioned before, they're really, really young. Bo Nix and crew, they were a year ahead of schedule as far as I was concerned with Denver. And now I think they're here to stay and love that. Look, him going to Denver under Sean Payton was central casting.
Yes.
And in this case, the remake's pretty good. It's not Breeze, but it's a really good facsimile.
I agree.
You have that. McCarthy, we have to find out because he didn't play at all last year. Penix in Atlanta, Terry Fontenot, their GM, he said we're going for it. With the going back and getting James Pierce in the first round, they're going to try and chase him down.
What was your thoughts on him, Penix, real quick, CD?
Who, Penix?
Pierce, because I know you're a Vol guy.
Pierce, love the athletic ability, but I was firmly convinced from everyone I talked to that he was going to fall to the second round.
Wow. Okay.
People were really leery about, you know, after a while it gets old, but you really can't detail everything that you know.
Right.
Because in a lot of cases, it's not fair.
Right. Because everyone's got something. Exactly.
And let the kid prove differently, please.
Right.
But there are a lot of people who are leery about, I don't know about him off the, you know, I don't know about this. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Well, haven't heard a peep about that at all in Atlanta.
And that's a good place for him to go. Ra's not going to look.
Real good place.
Yeah. Ra's a good guy to get the most out of somebody.
And I think that's a good one for him. So back to your original question, most success. I think Denver's going to push at it. I do think Jaden Daniels is going to do it again. I don't expect Minnesota to fall into an abyss, though, with J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah.
I think people are like, oh, God, you know. Look, they didn't expect Darnold to be good.
Right.
Okay? That's a good team that's built around him, and he's been with the team for 2 years. This is going to be a second year with the team. He did so many things behind the scenes to prepare for this year. You and I both know there's nothing like playing and it being live, but his preparation – if people knew everything that went on in terms of prep and how they did things, they treated him like a starting quarterback even when he wasn't playing.
Which is lovely to hear that,
Tests, reviews, meetings one-on-one with Kevin O'Connell to go over game plan. What do you like? What don't you like? Why do you like this? What do you want to do that? How they tailored his practice schedule to have him work. All those things to try and have him ready for this moment, which will begin on Monday night in Chicago.
Yeah,
it's a big deal. I don't think they fall off the cliff. And in fact, Kevin O'Connell, that team that went 7-10 2 years ago was his best coaching job. That was five different quarterbacks.
Yeah, it just figured it out.
And by the way, the other 2 years he's been the head coach, they've won 13 and 14 games. Think about that.
Got
he won 13 his first year, 7 his second because, you know, things regressed with quarterbacks, et cetera. And then came back last year with a quarterback that no one really thought, and 114.
Made it work. Yeah, he is a whisperer for sure, good. Man. I cannot wait. Thursday can't get here fast enough. Charles, we appreciate you as always. Have a good call on Sunday. I know you'll crush it. I'll send you a couple of texts beforehand, get you motivated, yeah. Brother. But definitely appreciate you as that. Always, man.
Always appreciate you. Continued success. Looking forward to watching this and jumping on this ride with everyone else. Here we go again.
Yes, indeedy. That is Charles Davis, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you check him out Sunday alongside Andrew Catalan and Jason McCourty on CBS or Paramount Plus, wherever you're, however you're consuming the game this weekend, as he calls Dolphins and Colts. That's going to do it here for this Wednesday night edition of Overtime. If you want to keep the conversation going with me on social media, it is at @NELL_BTP. I'm back with you tomorrow, 4 to 7 on our sister station, the Team 980, for the Burgundy and Gold Today.